And welcome everybody to edition 51 of the Bangers and Classics podcast. I remember that because last week was memorable, and this week may not as be as memorable. And that's with me, James Roper, and him, David Malloy. And what's David been up to?
Well, I've been receiving apologies from all the various people that couldn't make it on last week's podcast.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, even got an apology from the Wall Snob. He wasn't actually invited, but he thought he'd better just apologise anyway. Mm.
Good for
him. So that's about it. Not been doing a great deal, one thing or another, just bits and bobs, as the saying goes. I did see one classic car when I was out the other day. It's one I've reported on before. This is a Peugeot Theo 6 Cabriolet. It's in metallic green, and it's got a sort of contrasting russet-coloured hardtop. I can tell you it's a 2001 or 2002 model. Looks in very good condition. It was parked near a very nice park in Ayr, but it moved off before I got too close to it, perhaps unsurprisingly. Another news, I was taking a walk down an area where there were some workshops and some of the doors were open. As I was passing, I happened to see a Corvette. I think it was a C5. I could only see a fraction of it because the door wasn't fully raised. The place next door had an old Rover. I'm trying to think what model it was. I didn't get a very good look at it. And what appeared to be an MGB with rally-style spotlights on it. So that's interesting. I'll go back down there and see who's about, maybe have a chat with them someday. Because it's the kind of place, again, you wouldn't expect to find unusual cars. It's a place where there's lots of little garages and workshops, people doing a bit of spray painting, MOTs, that kind of thing. So to find some relatively uncommon cars there, it was a bit of a boon for me, I have to say.
Oh, well, that's good. I saw millions of things, actually, David. I went out of the county. I went to Essex last week, and I saw lots and lots and lots of things. So I'll just skim over them. I saw a Reliant Robin parked at a jaunty angle by a busy A road, but the people had long gone. And it was a bit like they'd just sort of given up and gone off for a walk.
They weren't dressed as Batman and Robin, were they?
No, they weren't, David. It was quite surprising. You'll be very excited to hear that I saw a GTV Cabriolet, actually, or open top, or whatever it would be.
Spider,
yeah, that's it. I was struggling there to get to the right term. It was only a twin spark. I know that you prefer the bigger engine, but I thought that was quite interesting to actually see, because I can't remember the last time I saw one of those, a massive amount of time ago. I saw a Lotus Exige, and I knew it was an Exige because the registration number was like Exige, basically. But it made a very lovely sound, and it had an extremely large wing on the back, so that was quite exciting. And I saw a pickup on a trailer, which wouldn't be that remarkable, but it was one of those American ones. It was a Ford F100, so it was like a mid-60s one. And it had obviously been resprayed recently, and it was slightly tricked up. But those sort of mid-1960s pickups were just wonderful things. They were tiny, really, compared to the behemoths that you have now. And that was quite entertaining. So either someone's just had it restored or just bought it or were delivering it. But that looked like a very, very nice vehicle. But I'll sort of stop there because there was lots of other things, and I should save them up because just in case I don't see anything at all next week.
you can always send them to me.
I can do, but those were all the Essex sightings. So that was quite good fun.
No white XR3A Cabriolets.
No, it wasn't.
Things have changed.
That's right. But I also, because I went to a sort of a motor trade thing, I spoke to a man who's a friend of a friend, but he's very into Formula Ford. He's quite an old bloke, but he used to beat Johnny Herbert on a regular basis Formula Ford, and but he still does it. Despite he broke his back a few years ago, but he still enjoys it. His wife still lets him out to do it. He's got four cars, and he just has fun. He just does it because it's great fun. And that was a marvelously life affirming thing to see, that somebody who's into their 70s just enjoys racing. And he's going to be racing near me soon, so I might make an effort to go and see him.
There was an older chap up here, whom I've met, A few years ago, I'm not sure if he still does it, but up to certainly 3-4 years ago, he was hill climbing regularly. He was over 80 when I met him. But I believe in his 70s, probably in the second half of his 70s, he sustained a very curious injury in a hill climb.
Right.
He and some of the other guys, after the hill climb was finished, were at the top of the course, and someone procured a kid's toy tractor. So they all took turns going down the hill climb course in this toy tractor. And he was trying to beat the fastest time. Lost control and ended up going down the embankment. I had to be taken to hospital, where I believe the nurses had a right good laugh at the story. But good, you know, good luck to him. That's what I like to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I've got some photographs of him driving his car. It was a hill climb car, that is, an Austin Healey Sprite. I think it was. It was a midget. I couldn't, you know, I'm not sure if it was a Sprite Mark IV or a midget. I can't quite remember, but there's photographs somewhere of him. Don't think I've got any really good ones, unfortunately.
No.
Which is kind of par for the course, let's be honest. Well, got to be honest, Gov, got to be honest. So, yeah, any news this week, James?
No, I don't think there is any news. Apart from the fact that I think we've been meaning to sort of mention that BMW, who make Minis now, apparently, are going to make, they make, modern Minis, and that's fine. They can do what they want, but they're actually taking old Minis and then putting electric motors in them. The interesting thing is they haven't said how much it's going to cost. So we know it's going to be an awful lot of money because they will have to restore the car as well. And that is not a cheap thing to do. But it's also extremely pointless. It's one of the most pointless things I've ever heard ever about anything. It's just, we know my views and your views on this. But once it gets, they're sort of doing it to sort of, to goad us, really. So they'll say, classic cars, it's the normal thing to do. It's the normal thing to do to make them go electricity car route, but it isn't. And we've got to call them out about this a lot more. They've got to be told that they should stay away, go and invent your own, and that's fine. But the old stuff, just leave it alone. It's not clever. And it isn't the right thing to do, but there you go.
I mean, you can argue it from a cost point of view, obviously. You can argue it from an ecological point of view. The survey that Polestar carried out a few years ago. For new cars, just for new EVs against a new ICE car, and it would be 70,000 miles before an EV reached parity in terms of its environmental damage with an ICE car, and then it began to become less environmentally unfriendly. Obviously, with one of these cars, you're taking a perfectly functional car, presumably, and sticking in all sorts of gubbins, batteries and motors, particularly the batteries, because we know that's where the real problem is. And it's also an engineering point of view. When you think about it, I mean, you're changing the weight distribution of these cars. You're changing the set. You're potentially changing the center of gravity. You're potentially changing the driving characteristics completely. What's the point? And now it's time for a first on Bangers and Classics. For this week's Banger or Classic, we are going to feature an EV, well, a hybrid. And that hybrid is the Honda Insight Mark 1. And I would love to hear, as I'm sure you would, the views of Mr. Ruppert on it.
Thank you very much, David. I really like these. I do remember them at the time. I remember going to a Honda launch for something else where they had one of these, and that's all I drove. Whatever Honda they were launching, I didn't drive, I don't think, or if I did, I did it for 5 minutes. But I spent all my time in this because no one else was driving it. And it was a curiously fascinating little car. In many ways, it did seem that it could possibly be some sort of future. I would assume it never made Honda a bean at all, because they didn't sell that many of them. And it was probably an extremely expensive car to make. So it was a loss leader for them. But technically, it was quite an interesting car. And if you're going to do batteries, which, as we know, it's not the ideal way to go. But this is probably one of the more intelligent things to do, in that the battery never worked on its own. It was always there as an assistant. So it was as if you could switch off the internal combustion engine and then just rely on the battery. It didn't work like that. And actually, the battery did several other things. It did actually act as a starter motor as well. So that was sort of quite clever. I think that probably means that once they're worn out, you need to spend a bit of money sorting one out. It's not going to be easy to do. But I think as a technically interesting car, it is probably one of the very best that's ever been made, I would have thought, in the last 20, 30 years. You know, if you compare it to that really quite ridiculous, I think the Volkswagen XL1, which was, you know, had a silly rattly diesel in it, that they were, I think, did some phenomenal amount to the gallon. But this was a proper sophisticated little car. It was very nice to drive. It was narrower at the back than it was wider at the front. So, and it, you know, the rear wheels were partially covered, so it was all very swoopy. It's all very Dan Dare looks. And the dashboard was a fascinating thing to behold as well, but it was all very, very appropriate. So, and yeah, it would do 60-odd miles to the gallon very easily on a petrol engine, which, you know, would teach a lot of people a lot of things today. So, I rather liked it. Yeah, it is a bit complicated, but... it's a very good piece of Honda engineering. I don't know if you agree with that, David.
Oh, I do. Mm. I mean, I don't think the batteries were very sophisticated. I think they were Panasonic units.
Yeah.
They were quite readily available. In terms of replacing them, I don't think that was a major issue. I mean, it was quite a small battery pack.
Yeah.
Maximum output, the batteries gave, what, 13 horsepower?
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah. You mentioned that it looked a bit like a Dan Dare car.
Mm.
Well, to me, the shape has shades of Ed Straker's car in it.
Yeah,
it does. You know, particularly in that goldy colour you see that you often saw them in. So it did look good.
Yeah.
It looked futuristic. It looked swippy. It's only a 1 litre petrol engine.
Mm.
With the petrol engine and with the electric motor in tandem, the most you got out of it was 73 brake horsepower.
Mm.
But on the other hand, it didn't weigh much either.
No.
It made extensive use of aluminium, which is great. There were only two seats and not a great deal of luggage space, which... Okay, it's not a family car.
No.
But that's perhaps missing the point if you think it is. On the other hand, you get excellent fuel economy. You get fairly low emissions for a petrol car, very low emissions.
Yeah.
You had regenerative braking, which was a great idea.
Mm, yeah.
This is a long time. This is back in 1999, remember?
It was.
They were doing this. Mm. The handling possibly wasn't the best because it had a very narrow rear track.
Mm.
I think it was 1/6-5 section tyres. But those are minor issues. Those can be easily rectified and tidied up. It showed the way forward. I mean, it made an excellent commuter car. It was a car that wasn't strictly just from driving from your home to a railway station, say 5 miles away. You could drive to your office 30 miles or 40 miles away or 100 miles away in it. It was capable. It could be used for everything. As long as there were only two people going to be in it and a modicum of luggage, it was perfect for all functions.
Absolutely. So, yeah. No, I've just looked into Ruppert's Bangerpedia, and actually the average MPG was quoted as 83.1.
So yeah, you'll find it if you read American publications, you'll find the MPG somewhere in the 70s. But people keep forgetting this, that the American gallon is less volume than an Imperial gallon, which the rest of the world uses. It's 4.546 litres in an Imperial gallon. And, oh, crikey, it's about 13% less than an American gallon. So every time you see American MPG figures, bear in mind you have to round them up by a factor of probably about 12.5%, 13% to get our figure. So very good little car for me. Yeah, classic, absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, it is. I would buy one tomorrow, but good luck trying to find one because there aren't very many around at all. There were some imports, I think, but very, 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 very few of them. There's only a couple of hundred officially, I think, came here.
And I'm always quite fans to CRZ, which was a later hybrid. Wasn't as fuel efficient, unfortunately, but there are plenty of those around.
Mm.
And I haven't completely given up on the idea of buying one. That may be a shock to some people.
Mm.
Anyone from this podcast would consider buying an electric vehicle or a part electric vehicle. Well, it shouldn't be.
No.
Because it's all about whether or not the product works and makes sense.
That's right.
Whether it's good for the environment, and these cars are. So there we have it. It's a bit of a bombshell. The Bangers and Classics crew like the Honda Insight, and we think they should have made more of them, and indeed that might be a good way forward, particularly if you get synthetic fuel as well coming along pipeline, so to speak. And on that somewhat unexpected note, perhaps we'll take a break. Welcome y'all to the Area 51 podcast. No one knows what the heck's going on here, at least of all the two numbskulls that presented. But there you go, that's radio, folks, or podcasting or something. Well, we're back onto more familiar territory. We're having a challenge.
Oh, right.
Yes, we're having a challenge. Now, the remit of the original challenge, and I say the original challenge for reasons that will become self-evident, was to find a rear-wheel drive French or Italian car from the 70s or 80s with an MOT or equivalent for £5,000 or under. And what did I do? Probably did none of those things. But that doesn't matter because I thought I found something really good. And I'll tell you about that in a moment.
Oh,
right. First of all, James, what did you find? Because you're the master at these things.
Well, that's very clever. Well, it's very nice of you to say that, David. I've got something that was actually registered in January 1970. So there I am, just under the wire. And I would have to go to Italy to collect it, obviously. And in the advert, it says it's the Italian for superb, which I think is just superb with an E on the end. And it is, I'd have to go to Rome to collect it, but it does look extremely good. And it's a Fiat 850 Speciale. And it's a lovely looking thing. It does look as though it's, I mean, the pictures, they've got a ton of pictures here. And it does look as though it's just rolled out of a showroom. And it is rather wonderful. So the obvious thing is to buy a 500. You can get 500s for not very much money. This one, actually, it does seem terribly cheap. There must be some giant catch, maybe. But it's 4,170 of your Great British pounds. And that doesn't seem very much at all to pay for this. But it's in that sort of off-white colour. And it's just extremely pretty. It's got white wall tyres. I'll probably change those when I get it. But apart from that, it does look absolutely superb. It's been looked after as well. There's sort of owners club decals and little badges actually on the front bumper. So it's obviously been looked after by somebody. And doesn't seem to be any rust, which is always a worry with old Fiats. But it does just look so splendid. It would make my life complete and it would fit in the garage. I might have to sell something, but... that's just an absolutely adorable little car. So that would suit me down to the ground. So I think I've qualified there for everything. But I would buy that tomorrow. I would quite happily get that. 57,000 kilometres, apparently, it's done. But you can believe that. But it's a left-hand drive and two doors. And it's worth having a look. Yeah, it says it's a stupenda. Fiat 850 Berliner. So that's how lovely it is. It's stupenda. So I found a stupenda car that I'm happy with, and you've been teasing me with what you've done, David, but I quite like to know where you've ended up and what you've actually bought.
Well, you went for a Maserati Quattroporte.
I did,
a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
well, it's always been said to me that I'm a door short of a saloon. So I've gone for the Fiat 128 Treporte.
Oh, right.
Fiat 128 3P, in other words.
Oh, right.
Which is a lovely little hatchback coupe.
Yeah.
Obviously based on the 128 saloon.
Yeah.
Launched in 1971. You had a choice, I believe, of 1100 and 1300cc engines, which, being Fiat, were actually pretty good, well-engineered engines, with a little bit of brio about them as well.
Yeah.
This one I found in Greece.
Oh, right.
It's only done 35,000 kilometres from new, it says. It says it was registered in 1979, but since production ended in 78, this must have been, obviously registered a few months after production ended.
Yeah.
So it's probably been sitting in a dealer's forecourt. But it said it had one owner from new until 2017.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. It's white with the 1100cc engine. It's got black striping and 128 sport decals. The seats have somewhat colourful centre sections. They're quite wide centre sections as well. Think deck chair seats and you're not far off it. Nice looking white paintwork, as I've said. Looks very fresh. Under bonnet could do with a bit of a clean up, as could the interior. Just a valley would probably do it. It's not, doesn't look to require anything in the way of major work. And it is said that it all works perfectly. €7,500.
Right.
£6,300. There's only 14 of these cars on the road in Britain. That's all that's left of them. You could bring one over, a very handsome one, a very low mileage one by all accounts, and I would hope the seller would have the documentation to evidence that. And you could drive around in your little left-hand drive Fiat, obviously making sure it's suitably rust-proofed because you wouldn't want this to go crusty on you, and look, $1 million for not a vast amount of money.
No.
And certainly, yeah. Other thing is, of course, it's front wheel drive. It's not rear wheel drive.
So Yeah.
I feel dismally on the price, and I feel dismally on the rear wheel drive. But to heck with it, I've always liked these. I really have since I was a kid. I remember seeing the 1283P and thinking that's a nice looking car, and nothing in all the years since has made me change my mind about that. So there we go. That's my selection for this week's challenge. It breaks the rules, but you know what? Sometimes they're there to be broken.
Oh, okay.
You can let me off with that one.
Well, I can do. I mean, you know, I've got about £1,000, haven't I, that I've saved on mine, even though I've got to drive it back from Italy. So you can have that. So, you know.
Yeah, but we've still got to pay import duties and stuff as well, of course.
Yeah, there will be some, but it depends these days. I don't know. On the really old stuff, they don't, over 25 years old, I think. You don't. Well, I haven't paid anything in the last few years, but the rules have changed.
Yeah, but I think since we left EU, though, that's the thing.
Well, I do buy stuff from Europe, but they're not cars. And it's a very confusing issue at the moment. And they sort of make it up as they go along at the moment.
Mm.
So, yeah, if anybody for business purposes imports stuff, they'll know that it varies every time you do it.
Yeah.
No consistency.
And read the website. If you're buying something abroad, I found this out recently. I bought something for the EV from a company in Germany.
Yeah.
And I had to pay import duty on it.
Mm.
And then I read the website a few months later. Hang on, they pay the import duty on it.
Mm.
So the courier had wrongly charged me something like £50. So the good news is I'm getting it back. But why pay it in the first place if you don't have to? Read the small print, check it out, and just be sure of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's your dosh and better in your pocket than in some governments. Let's be honest. They're only going to waste it. Having done the challenge, one thing left to do this week is a kind of shorter podcast this week we're doing. We're going back to the danger zone.
All right.
We're taking the highway right into it. And what we found there this week, lurking in the shadows, was a Fiat Uno. And there were just 181 Unos left on UK roads as at the last official figures. And those are the cars that are licensed with the DVLA. Obviously, there were others and so on, but 181. When you consider how many Unos there were at one time, again, that's a massive drop-off. Can you give us any reasons, James, why it would be a good thing to stop that, to arrest the decline by buying a Uno and cherishing it?
The Uno is a very wonderful little car. I mean, it was up against sort of Golfs and stuff back in the day. Mrs. Banganomics had one at a garage she worked at. It was her company car, so it was a sort of parts exchange that came in. And it was a nice little square thing. It was fun to drive. It was really good. And also, I think in 1989, with a car magazine, they were doing the Rover 200 was coming out. So that was what it was up against. So we had a Rover 200, a Renault 19, an Astra, a Ford Escorty thing, and an Uno. By far the nicest to drive out of all of them.
You sure it's not a Tipo you're thinking of there?
No. Or it could have been, but I can't remember now.
Because the Tipo looks like a bigger Uno. Yeah. It came along 89.
Yeah, you may be right, but I don't know. I get very confused about that because I think we had the Uno, and also I remember driving that. But the significant thing about that was the Renault 19 dropped its gear linkage on the floor, so I had to walk everywhere for a while, which wasn't great. But no, the Uno was just a lot of fun, and it was nicely designed. It looked the part. A Giugiaro creation, I would say. And it was just lovely. And to think there's so few of them. I think I've even got one in my sort of curb crawler book. There was a turbo that I looked at the time. A baker was selling it, as I remember rightly. I mean, rust would always kill them. That's probably what accounts for it. The reason there aren't so many about, and they just fell down the ownership scale. And as we know about these cars that you see everywhere, people don't care about them at all, like we do. But if I saw a clean and tidy one, I wouldn't hesitate to buy it at all.
Mm, absolutely. Just going back to the Renault 19, are you sure it was the gear linkage and not the clutch cable?
No, it's gear linkage.
It was
actually on the floor. It was so remarkable that the whole thing. So obviously a bolt had fallen out, and it was just on the floor. Great.
Yeah, I had two, including my beloved 16 valve, and that was the clutch cable was an issue with those. And yeah, I think with some of the Clios at the time as well. That was a real Achilles heel. But anyway, we digress. Back to the Uno. Yeah, it came out in 83. And main rival, James, because it was just when it launched within a few months of it, was the Porsche 205. And which car won the European Car of the Year 1984 award? It was the Uno.
Yeah.
It beat the 205 to it. That's how good it was. In fact, so good was it that between 83 and I think the end of production in Italy in 95, the Italians made about 6 million of these things.
Goodness me.
Yeah, Fiat would love to have those sort of numbers nowadays, let me tell you. As you say, it's a Giugiaro design. It contains some styling cues from the Lancia Mega Gamma prototype of, I think, 78, which was also by Giugiaro. And some of those cues made their way into the final design of the Uno. Good-looking little car. The proportions were right. The angles were right. It just was the right product for the right time. Good range of engines. And, of course, you had the turbos. You had the first series turbo, which I think had 105 horsepower or so, and the second series was 116. And yeah, they were a bit wild and woolly, but they didn't half shift. Let me assure you that they were pretty quick little things back in the day. So you covered everything. You'd three doors and five doors. You had a sporty model as well, and it was stylish. What's not to like? And again, well, the other thing, of course, was the prices. They weren't ridiculous. They were very competitively priced, so they sold well. As a modern classic, they've still got a lot of style. They've got typical Italian brio. They feel good to drive because they are good to drive. I can't see any real issues with owning one, except finding a good one. And once if you get a good one, then for pity's sake, please do look after it, because there aren't too many of these left, and they really do deserve to be cherished.
I would buy one tomorrow if I knew where to find one, but there isn't one.
No, very, very hard to find. Anyway.
As you say, they're going to be in a bit of a state as well, probably. That's the other thing.
Some of them will, yeah. But this is the thing that obviously perhaps there were some and so on, maybe partially restored. There may be some to be found in barns that were put there in early 1990s, perhaps by someone, and just left untouched since. There's got to be some decent ones out there somewhere. And I think that's all for this week's podcast, James, unless you've got anything else for us.
No, I think we're going to go to Italy, aren't we, to go and buy some cars? Because it's been a very Italian-flavoured podcast, really.
Yeah, so the Italian job mark too.
Very much so.
This time we're not nicking their gold, we're taking their cars.
We're going to go and take all their cars, yeah. We're going to take a transporter and not have a Austin Cambridge on it.
No.
A rusty Austin Cambridge.
They can keep the Austin Cambridge and we'll take the Unos, etc. How does that sound?
No, that's a good deal.
Right, okay. Well, see you in the Stelvio Pass then.
Yeah, I'll see you there, David. Obviously in a pretty car.
Paid for?
I hope so.
And that note, cheerio.
Yeah, everybody.